It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Sandra Smith.
I'm Trey Gowdy.
I'm Shannon Bream, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, December 20th, 2022. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. The January 6th House Select Committee's work is done. Before the final report is released tomorrow, the committee members announced criminal referrals to the Justice Department against former President Trump at their final public hearing.
While it may not have an effect what the Justice Department is doing, and the Justice Department may take it into consideration, probably will, but they will not be dispositive for the Justice Department's decision.
I'm Dave Anthony. The next Congress takes over in 2 weeks. And while Republicans will have control of the House, they can't agree yet on who should be Speaker.
This is a political game of chicken. It depends on just how long people are willing to stare at each other and continue to have vote after vote after vote.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
The final January 6th House Select Committee hearing ended with agreement to criminally refer former President Trump to the Department of Justice, as well as others, over the January 6th Capitol riot. Toward the end of the hearing, Maryland Democratic Congressman Jamie Raskin announced 4 criminal referrals against then-President Trump to DOJ.
Ours is not a system of justice where foot soldiers go to jail and the masterminds and ringleaders get a free pass.
The committee members insisted then-President Trump's actions resisted a peaceful transfer of power. Committee Vice Chair and outgoing Wyoming Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney said Trump's silence during the riot was among the most egregious findings.
No man who would behave that way at that moment in time can ever serve in any position of authority in our nation again.
She called it a dereliction of duty. Ahead of announcing their findings, the committee played a video montage from Capitol police officers, White House attorneys, state elections officials, and his own former Attorney General Bill Barr, testifying in an effort to establish that Trump himself knew claims of election fraud were inaccurate. But former DOJ prosecutor and Fox News contributor Andy McCarthy noted after the hearing,
you know, in connection with Trump's speech, he took pains in the speech to say that, you know, he wanted them to march peacefully. The fact that the committee doesn't broadcast that he said that doesn't make that go away. Yeah. So, you know, again, this is a theatrical exercise more than, you know, a real hearing process.
In the end, they announced criminal referrals for inciting an insurrection, conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to make a false statement, and obstruction of an official proceeding. One of his attorneys, John Eastman, was mentioned for those referrals as well. And 4 congressmen, whom the committee said were subpoenaed and did not respond to those subpoenas, were referred to the House Ethics Committee. The Department of Justice doesn't have to act on these referrals, and the committee will dissolve in a couple of weeks when Republicans take the majority in the House.
There really wasn't anything that particularly surprised me.
Richard Serafini is a former Department of Justice prosecutor and now a current criminal defense attorney in Florida.
I guess the only thing that I'm a little bit surprised about is that the part that they did publicly as opposed to the report, which is public but is there for people to read, seemed to deal only with former President Trump. Did not identify in any great detail the other folks that the committee is recommending criminal charges against.
And what do we know about who those are? Because they did say John Eastman's name, who was the attorney working with then-President Trump.
Right. They did mention him, and I think he was the only one mentioned. And I haven't read the report yet, but I think there might be others, maybe Mark Meadows, maybe Rudy Giuliani, and a couple of others whose names have been pretty front and center in terms of the attempt to overturn the election.
So they did recommend criminal referrals on 4, I guess, counts, if you will: obstruction of an official proceeding, conspiracy to defraud the U.S., conspiracy to make a false statement, and incite, assist, or aid or comfort, adding aid or comfort to an insurrection. If this goes down a legal path here, is the president's counter argument, yes, I told people to fight, but I also said march peacefully, and by the way, focusing on my lack of action, you know, that I was sitting by and I didn't tell people to go home, didn't call additional law enforcement, as the committee says, that that's insufficient to charge with an insurrection or aiding and comforting and assisting an insurrection?
in a lot of these types of cases, and when I say these types, obviously this is a first with a former president, but a lot of the cases where it's what we call a white-collar crime case, it's a lot of it has to do with knowledge and intent. And a very fertile area for defense is very often, well, my client did not have the intent or he did not have the knowledge. So I would tend to think in a number of the charges, and in the substantive charges anyway, that would be a very likely defense. As far as the conspiracy goes, that's something different. A conspiracy is basically a meeting of minds to do something illegal. And the illegality is the agreement, not what happens after the agreement. So in that instance, I think what you have to focus on if you're defending the former president is saying, well, there were discussions, but he never actually formally entered into agreement. And when I say formally, I don't mean that there's a contract or something like that. Obviously, there in a criminal agreement, there's never going to be a contract written. There's going to be an informal agreement among the co-conspirators. And I suspect if this does ultimately get indicted, we're going, you know, we're taking several leaps of faith here to say that it will ultimately be indicted. But if these charges were to be brought, I suspect that one avenue of defense for the president would be to say that, no, he never entered into a conspiracy. And that would then, I mean, clearly the committee has put together evidence, and theoretically the Department of Justice would have that and other evidence that they would initially use to bring the charge.
Does the Justice Department do anything with this? I understand they don't have to, or do they just, stick with their own investigation? We know Attorney General Merrick Garland has called in former DOJ public corruption attorney Jack Smith to act as special counsel, and he's investigating a number of things, right? Mar-a-Lago and the Mar-a-Lago documents, I should specify, and January 6th. Is that more likely to be the avenue they'd pursue if they were to pursue one?
Well, yes. I mean, I think it's fair to conclude that the Justice Department has been at this a long time. Much of what the committee presented to the public, I suspect the Justice Department already knows or has developed that evidence on their own. I certainly think the Justice Department has been monitoring and knows what the committee has done and is aware of the facts that the committee has put together and has adduced for the public. And they'll certainly use that and go through it. But the Justice Department, as you said, has been doing and will continue to do its separate investigation and make its determination based on its full set of findings and whether it thinks there's been a crime committed and whether if they do think a crime was committed, if they think they can sustain a conviction.
Yeah, if the DOJ doesn't act on these referrals, but they do act, say, on Special Counsel Smith's investigation, what role does the January 6th committee's report serve, if anything? Is it like a force multiplier, or is it more just something that, that people will point to for the public to consume rather than, assisting the DOJ?
I think this was more designed for the public and for Congress ultimately to make a determination of what happened and if there's any legislation that needs to be enacted to keep it from happening again. One of which is making clear that's working its way through Congress and may ultimately be signed into law before the Congress expires. And, is to make clear that the vice president has absolutely no substantive role in the selection of a president. And I suspect that the emphasis on what was going on and the pressure on former Vice President Pence is certainly significant in that regard. I also think it's significant probably from a historical perspective. I mean, history will record that ultimately, right now this was a committee of the House of Representatives, but ultimately the House of Representatives thought that there was sufficient evidence to warrant the indictment and prosecution of a former president. So while it may not have an effect what the Justice Department is doing, and the Justice Department may take it into consideration, probably will, but they will not be dispositive for the Justice Department's decision, it is an important exercise, both, as I said, historically and potentially politically, which, is for somebody else to opine on, not for me.
Yeah, well, this is a little bit political, but I'll ask it of you anyway. I think you referenced it. There are legislative efforts, proposals to address the Electoral Count Act, right? The vice president there in this legislation would essentially have a clerical role. It would be stipulated that he couldn't, you know, outright reject Electoral College votes arrived at state by state, and it would raise the threshold to object to a slate of electors. It would have to be like 1/5 of the House and Senate. I know the committee's report is supposed to offer insight into preventing another January 6th. Does it remain to be seen what those recommendations are? Or do you think at this point it might be the best path forward would be to focus on this legislation pertaining to the Electoral Count Act?
Well, I think that that will be what Congress and what the House of Representatives is focusing on. I'm certain that there will be a vote in the House of Representatives authorizing that the referrals be made to the Department of Justice. But I really think that what the Congress can do with the information that they have is basically to tighten up some of the rules on the Electoral Count Act in particular, and make it as difficult as possible for the country to be put in a position like it was back on January 6th.
And your final thoughts on, and you kind of touched on it, but how or if these hearings over the course of the year mattered? Like, did they shift things in your mind in hindsight? You know, Trump says he's running for president again. The committee members said they believed, you know, the information they've gleaned and their referrals here should result in him never holding public office again. But I guess the question is, will it ultimately be up to the voters?
Potentially, yes. I mean, unless the only statute that the committee recommended criminal charges on is 18 U.S. Code 2383, which is basically the insurrection statute, which if convicted, I believe prevents or disqualifies the person convicted from holding office again. Even were Trump to be convicted of any of the others, there's not a bar there that would prevent him from running for office, theoretically. So ultimately, yes, I mean, it'll probably be the voters who will decide. I mean, he's running. He's kind of running a slow motion campaign at this point. But but he's announced that he's running. Whether he thought that would end the Justice Department investigation and that's why he announced, or whether he's serious and going forward, I mean, remains to be seen. But at this point, I mean, there's nothing barring him from running for office and from running for presidency again. So to that extent, if he persists, and if he runs, then it'll be up to voters first, you know, the primary voters, and then should he make it to the nomination or get himself on the ballot to the general voting public.
Former DOJ prosecutor Richard Serafini, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
2 weeks from today, the next Congress will be sworn in, with Republicans in power in the House, but within the party, a power struggle.
We won the majority. Then we had a primary to select who would be the nominee for the floor. I won 85% of that vote. But now 5 members want to hold up our ability to move forward.
That's current House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who wants to replace Nancy Pelosi as House Speaker. But as McCarthy said, 5 of his fellow Republicans oppose him.
They have no other candidate but simply to do the work. The only other people who are cheering them on are the Democrats, AOC and others.
GOP Congressman Matt Rosendale is among those 5.
All we're trying to do is re-empower the members of Congress to represent their constituents equally.
Rosendale tells Fox he's trying to change this.
Right now, there's a system in place that allows the Speaker and 9 members of the Rules Committee to make all decisions about legislation, and everyone else is forced to just vote yes or no on it.
And that opposition is throwing a rare wrench in the works on Capitol Hill.
We've not had this much drama surrounding a Speaker of the House race really since 1923.
Chad Pergram is Fox News' senior congressional correspondent.
And this is when Frederick Gillette, who is a Democrat from Massachusetts, they had to go to 9 ballots before they decided on the Speaker of the House. He had been the Speaker of the House, but it took him 3 days. The reason this is so critical is the House cannot do anything until it elects a Speaker. That includes swearing in the rest of the membership, certainly establishing committees. Republicans made a lot of promises to voters that they were going to investigate the origins of the pandemic, bring in Dr. Anthony Fauci, investigate Hunter Biden's laptop, maybe impeach the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas over how he's handled the border. You can't do any of that. And they're already behind constituting the committees and setting things up because you can't agree on a speaker. And this is where, you know, McCarthy has started to make this casing. We can't do any of these things. And it's going to be very chaotic around here to start the new year. And it's a bad look. It foreshadows the problems that Republicans will have governing. I mean, if they don't have this wrapped up by January 3rd, this place is going to be like an explosion in a dairy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable because you have to keep voting and voting and voting until you get the speaker. And that's why some people think this might take, you know, maybe several days. It took 2 months back in 1856, by the way.
Well, that's, of course, a different world. I mean, we in 1856, we hadn't even had the Civil War yet. Congress was part-time. It was a much smaller country. Everything was different. Now, if they don't have it ironed out by January 3rd, these five Republicans will set up this very potentially long vote. Who are these five, and why are they opposed to Kevin McCarthy?
Well, you have Andy Biggs, Republican of Arizona, who, you know, got a lot of the other votes when they voted internally in the House Republican Conference back in November. You have Matt Rosendale, who's a Republican from Montana. You have Ralph Norman, who's a Republican from South Carolina. Those are a few. Matt Gaetz, who has said he absolutely will not vote for Kevin McCarthy.
These are conservatives, Chad, and McCarthy, isn't he a conservative?
Well, you see, that's the problem. They say we want to have control over being able to call for a speaker's election in the middle of the Congress at any point, to which, you know, Republicans have said, well, Democrats could do that then on us, you know, to say nothing of the fact that you lord this over Kevin McCarthy or whoever the speaker is like a sword of Damocles. And you've immediately, you know, taken away some of their power. They don't view McCarthy as conservative because he's gone along with other things that you have to do to govern. That happens to all leaders, both parties, both in the House and Senate. You know, he's against this big omnibus spending bill here. But sometimes you have to kind of say, OK, we have to do this to govern. We have to do this for the country. He's been adamant in his opposition there. But that's not enough for this group. And here's the problem. It's not so much that these folks aren't conservative like Kevin McCarthy, it's that you have certain members in the Republican side, on the Republican side, and this has been brewing for quite a while now, who aren't interested in governing. They aren't interested in legislating. They aren't interested in cutting deals. They have been described to me from time to time as political arsonists. The idea that they're really good at blowing things up. This was the problem that John Boehner faced in the summer of 15 when Mark Meadows, later the chief of staff at the White House, then a congressman from North Carolina, he, you know, threatened Boehner with this idea of vacating the chair, that they would have a speaker's vote in the middle of the Congress. And ultimately, John Boehner kind of saw the writing on the wall, and that's why he announced his resignation that fall after the visit with the Pope.
Well, this is the other thing, too. You have, it seems, it's interesting, too, because this it's all going back to the old days of Martin Van Buren. He's OK. They have some members of the Republican caucus wearing OK buttons. Mm-hmm. Only Kevin. They will only vote, they say, for Kevin McCarthy. There's like 50 of those. So If they will not vote for anybody but him and the five Republicans won't vote for McCarthy, how long can this go?
This is a political game of chicken. It depends on just how long people are willing to stare at each other and continue to have vote after vote after vote. If they do that, you know, I've kind of described these scenarios on Capitol Hill as the Stockholm syndrome. They keep everybody here until they wear them down and they start to agree with their captors after a while. And so this is unprecedented territory, at least in the past century. This is where I talked about Frederick Gillette, where it took him a few days to get some concessions there. If you were a betting person and you were playing at the Bellagio in Las Vegas, yeah, you would probably look at the odds and say Kevin McCarthy has about an 80% chance of becoming speaker. But there's a big percentage out there because of the mechanics of this, which you just don't know. And this is where some of the Republicans have said, if it's not going to be McCarthy. These are, you know, some of the even the moderate Republicans. It's not going to be a sitting member of this body. Now, here we're really into extra parliamentary turf. We have never had a non-member be Speaker of the House. There's nothing in the House rules that prohibits it.
All right, let's back up. Let me back up. 435 representatives, they'll be sworn in. I mean, obviously they have to have the Speaker vote. But the Speaker of the House does not have to be one of those.
No. And this is where, you know, last summer.
That's crazy. I mean, that's.
This is where last summer you had these rattlings around that President Trump wanted to be Speaker of the House. And it was thought.
Can you imagine that? Holy.
Well, okay, you see, and this is where this is getting to be, you know, now he's not going to win now. That's for sure.
I mean, well, he'll never get 218 votes. There's no way.
No, exactly. So when they talk about somebody who might not be a member, the names that have been put forth to me are people who will not be a member as of 1201 on January 3rd. Look at these retiring Republicans. Lee Zeldin, who did very well, better than many expected, in the gubernatorial race for the governorship in New York. He will not be a member come January 3rd in the afternoon. Fred Upton, a Republican from Michigan, who's retiring. John Katko, a Republican from upstate New York, same deal. And there might
he voted to impeach Trump, though. I don't know how he gets to
18. You could see a coalition of some Democrats there. You see, this is where this gets interesting. You see, you just don't really know. And if you get, you know, it took them 163 votes with Nathaniel Banks in 1856. So if you get into the dozens of votes or something, you know, anything can happen. This is why this is so strange. We really don't know. And maybe, you know, this is what happened in 2015 is just before they had the vote in the conference, which the bar is lower in the conference, the Republican conference. This is not done on the House floor. McCarthy backed out. He had gone to John Boehner not long before that vote and said, I'm not going to stand for the vote. And it threw the House into chaos. And Paul Ryan, who said he did not want the job and was adamant that he did not the job, 2.5 weeks later, suddenly wanted the job and was Speaker. So you see how quickly this can kind of change.
So it's really, unless McCarthy does that this time, we're set up for a long, drawn-out vote, you think?
Potentially, absolutely. Potentially. And it's not just one roll call vote, it's vote after vote after vote. And the person who presides over the House, by the way, is Sherrol Johnson. Now, she right now is the clerk of the House of Representatives. That's a high position, an administrative position here in the House.
Make her the
Democratic clerk.
Oh, she's
and she will still be presiding and will be in charge of the House until they get a speaker.
But
she's
a Democrat,
and they will pick
their
own clerk. Yes, she is a Democrat.
Okay. So she wouldn't give her the job then. Okay.
No, but this is where I'm talking about, you know, if they don't solve this pretty soon, it's going to be like an explosion in a dairy. It's going to be very messy.
Now to something the current Congress is still working on. They're on deadline by Friday to approve more funding to keep the government open to avert a partial shutdown. There is bipartisan support in the Senate for a bill still being finalized to provide more than $1 trillion in spending for the rest of this fiscal year. As Chad mentioned, Kevin McCarthy is opposed to that in the House, telling Fox Business,
the voters have voted to change. The Republicans would be in power in 15 days. So why wouldn't we simply do a continuing resolution, fund the government into the next year, and then we'd have an opportunity to actually cut spending?
But his counterpart in the Senate, Republican leader Mitch McConnell, supports the long-term funding plan.
Well, they are really doing him a favor, and maybe other Republicans in the House, for, you know, dealing with this bill now, presuming they can deal with it. Because if they can't even figure out who their speaker is, you know, the worst case, the apocalyptic scenario would be to have this short-term bill to fund the government into early January, and then the government shuts down because the House can't figure out who its speaker is because they can't vote. They're restricted, you see. Now, that's probably not going to happen.
Republican senators don't want that.
No, but there is a slight chance that this drifts into next week. The House and Senate have still not released the bill text of this. You see, and this is part and parcel of this argument why some Republicans, even those who are for McCarthy, say, you know, this is a rotten system. We get these, you know, $1.7 trillion in spending. We've had a couple of days to look at it. It's just before Christmas when everybody's anxieties are at their highest. We got to pass the bill because we got to get home to trim the tree. And so they vote for anything. And so they put it off till right then. So they'll probably pass this in the Senate first, maybe Thursday. That's been Mitch McConnell's line in the snow Thursday, the 22nd. He said, because we intend to be on the road on the 23rd. But I'll tell you, they were here voting on Christmas Eve on Obamacare in 2009. You know, I remember a day 24 years ago, I was in this building and they were voting on the House floor to impeach the president.
Was it 4 years ago when the government did shut down because then President Trump didn't approve of a bill and then it put things on hold for a while?
Yep, that happened. We were here between Christmas and New Year's in 2012 into 2013 with the fiscal cliff. I remember the Senate starting to vote at about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning on January 1st. And then the House took it up the next day, voting, finally finishing it, I think, about 12:30 in the morning on January 2nd. It's always like this. So, you know, you'll forgive me if I'm not exactly embracing the holiday spirit here, Dave.
Well, hopefully for your sake, it won't be that way this time.
For some reason, I'm skeptical.
Chad Pergram, Fox News senior congressional correspondent. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
The geography, weather, and overall aesthetics of California are unbeatable. But when you add in the taxes, homelessness, policies, and leaders, well, it makes being part of the state a little less appealing. But California's fifth largest county is doing something about it. Residents of San Bernardino County have voted to research the possibility of secession from the state. This is legit. Voters approved a ballot measure directing officials to look into the legal ramifications of seceding from the state. That's right. This more conservative county east of LA wants to become its own state. Now, it's a long shot because even if voters approve secession, the California State Legislature and Congress would have to sign off, and that's highly unlikely. But I gotta give it to San Bernardino. They are taking their sick and tired of it attitudes and taking action. California is unaffordable for the middle class, and while a whole new state within a state is a pipe dream, it's worth dreaming anyway. Good luck, San Bernardino. I'm Tommy Lahren.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadShow.com.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.